broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I'll just kiss your belly button.
Turn out the lights. This party's over.
Christmas is the biggest holiday and means...
The fact is, we need us to continue to stimulate our economy.
That is a threat on the radio.
This is crap.
World famous Phil Hendry show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we take you through the looking glass and beyond. And go places other talk shows cannot go in our never-ending search for just a couple of laughs in this increasingly, not increasingly humorless. It is getting tougher. But anyway, I digress. Welcome to the program here this evening. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-PHIL. And please visit us online at philhendryshow.com. You know, with these holiday seasons, these multiple holiday seasons, I don't know what I'm talking about. One holiday season is enough, I guess. We are opening up our merchandise store. It'll be this week, and we're going to be selling our Best Of series, our classic Best Of series from 1997, I believe, all the way to the present, to the present, till 2005. So let me get my information straight here. Anyway, go over there and check out our merchandise store when we get it open, and take advantage of our classic Best Of CDs, because when they're gone, man. And I mean, we have a lot of them, and we're going to sell them all out. And really, the goal is just sort of get rid of all of this old stuff. I suppose we could throw it in a garbage can, but, you know, we could make a couple of dollars with it, and I'm sure you'd like it. So we'll do that and then move on with some other merchandise. It's at philhendryshow.com, and while you're there, check out a live streaming video of our show tonight. That's right. You can watch us there at philhendryshow.com. Coming up tonight, an oral sex joke on The Simpsons rubs some people the wrong way, if you'll pardon the expression. Toll workers in Florida are banned from decorating their booths with Christmas gear because some drivers complained. And Kathy Griffin gets booed by our troops over a Bristol Palin joke. Coming up, we have Dr. Jim Sadler and Vernon Dozier, who is a football coach at Belmar Academy in Glendale, California. Later on, he'll be talking about what they call hover parents. And that's a nicer way for saying pain in the parents. 877-876-PHIL. Tonight, our affiliate spotlight on KWAM 990 AM in Memphis and KPSI 920 AM in Palm Springs, California. And philhendryshow.com, of course, is our website. Dr. Jim Sadler is going to be up here in a moment to talk with us about sex education and the parameters, the limits, the, you know, where, you know, how far do you go and where do you go and why do you go? Okay. And why? Well, all of this comes from a Katy Perry appearance. Katy Perry, a popular singer who I think it was not too long ago, was involved in some other contretemps having to do with language. Katy Perry started out with a song called I Just Kissed a Girl, or wasn't that it? Yeah. And Dr. Sadler is on the line here from his office in San Diego. Dr. Jim Sadler, sir, how are you?
Oh, thank you, Phil.
Do you recall the Katy Perry song?
Katy Perry did a song called I Kissed a Girl, and I think it was interpreted by some to mean that she was endorsing some kind of a homosexual attraction. But I must tell you, I think the song was more about just making people uncomfortable, you know, shocking people.
Right. So she's okay, so we're not talking about overt homosexuality there?
Well, I think there's a difference between what you just mentioned, a sort of overt display of one's orientation, and a suburban teenage girl, which I think is what Katy Perry is representing there in that song, trying to shock her, perhaps a suburban college girl trying to shock her straight-laced friends and her parents. I think that's really what that song was about.
All right, well, Katy Perry used The Simpsons to put a big pile of coal in Sesame Street's stocking on Sunday night, according to the writer here in the New York Daily News. The 26-year-old songstress used her guest spot on the Christmas episode of The Simpsons to take multiple jabs at the children's show that banned her duet with Elmo after deeming her costume too risque. That was it.
Yeah, she had a costume on that I think was a little low cut.
All right, and she appeared as part of Maggie's five-action dream sequence involving her A. Fluppet Christmas Book Special. During the initial scene of the episode, the Fox show's cast appeared in live puppet mode, complete with sitcom laugh track. So I guess they were playing there. The Muppets. As the family prepared to take a vacation, Mo entered the scene, one of the Muppets, as their designated house sitter. He called his girlfriend to invite her over to his new bachelor pad, and, you know, the audience was kind of clucking their tongue, as the audience will, when it comes to, you know, bad boy there, Mo. So, in any event, Mr. Burns takes it upon himself to show up to wish the family happy holidays, but he's stopped in his tracks by Katy Perry, who arrives on the scene in a tight red latex dress with the Simpson family faces all over it. And then they get into this. Can you give me essentially what the joke was? Oh, you know what? On second thought, hold on for just a second, Dr. Sadler. We have the joke. I believe this is the joke anyway. It's the oral sex joke. Katy Perry and Mo on The Simpsons.
Yeah, I'll just kiss your belly button. Mm.
Oh, that's not my belly button. But I didn't say stop.
Aha. So there we have the joke. That's not my belly button, but I didn't say stop. And that had some people calling the network, I guess, upset with that. And I suppose what we want to talk to you about tonight, Dr. Sadler, and I'm apologizing to my audience right now because it's an extremely involved and confused setup. But essentially, it was an oral sex joke.
Yeah, well, it was a reference to oral sex on a decidedly adult animated sitcom. But it is a program that's watched by many young teenagers and children. So, and I think the show's producers know that. I think the show is on early enough as well to intimate that the program is definitely intended for the entire family. Where the show steps over the line for some people is the oral sex joke where she says, that's not my belly button, but I didn't say stop. And so we are led to believe that he's involved in kissing a part of her body that's perhaps...
Yeah, I think we understand the, female part.
Yes. Now, the intimation there and the suggestion there is very, very graphic. There's no question about it. But we're up against the problem that I find in my practice. We have young people who are curious about sex. We have parents who are increasingly uncomfortable with this sex education being provided in the schools. And the parents themselves are uncomfortable with providing the sex education themselves. So what are we left with? Well, we're left with a couple of options, and one of them might be right under our noses with a program like The Simpsons or any program that's watched by young people.
Well, what are you saying? We're left with a couple of options, one of them being that the kids are getting their sex education from TV shows?
Well, I think it's a difficult prospect to grasp that you're going to be educating children in terms of sex from television programs, but I think it's a possibility, and I think that rather than criticize it, look at the advantages of a child 8 or 9 years of age. They'll hear a joke like that, and that's not my belly button, but I didn't say stop. The natural question is going to be, what does she mean by that? The parent, I think, can then say, well, what they meant was, and so they partner with the television program in providing that sex education for that child.
But we've had parents in the past will say this: how do I answer that? My child is asking me these questions that I didn't want to have to answer, and now the TV show is throwing it out there, and now I have no choice, you know?
Well, I think if you look at it more objectively, you say the following thing: I've been reluctant to educate my child when it comes to sex education. The school is no place that I want them to be getting this. I think I have an opportunity here. If television can use these sex jokes, or television can make reference to a genitalia or the breasts or some other area, if you have Sesame Street and you have the ABCs, that can translate into some kind of a sex educational opportunity. If you have Dora the Explorer, for instance, which is a program children like, obviously the explorations can be of a sexual nature. And so what we have then are parents who are have a great opportunity allow the television program to give them an entree to this.
And all right, well, then what you're saying is the parents shouldn't complain. They should consider it to be, this is an opportunity. When the TV show drops a sex joke like Katy Perry saying, that's not my belly button, but don't stop.
Yes, it is an opportunity.
It's an opportunity for the parent to do what?
It's an opportunity for the parent to say what she meant was, he's kissing her, you know, her whatever you want to call it.
And what if the parent, in hearing that joke, didn't want to have to explain that right then?
Well, I think this is, again, what I was saying. You have to, you can't have it both. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't say, I don't want the school giving my child sex education. I don't want to do it. I don't want television to do it. Well, you're going to have to make a choice. And I think the school's not going to do it. You don't want to do it. But television can help you do it. And I think at that moment you have to recognize, well, this is a good teaching opportunity.
And all right, so Katy Perry on The Simpsons last night saying, that's not my belly button, but don't stop, was providing a teaching opportunity.
A teaching opportunity for the parents to say, well, what she meant was he was actually going to work on her, or not going to work, but...
Okay, all right. I mean, we don't want to start using adult terms.
No, but what I'm trying to say is you also want to be very colloquial, and you don't want to scare your child. So if he says, if she says, that's not my belly button, but say, well, what he was doing was he was, and you can do a number of things. You can use a word. You can, you know, use your tongue, you know, by just, you know, sticking your tongue out.
With a kid?
With a child, yes, because it's not threatening. Again, you don't want to...
But you're giving the the 8 or 9 year old the physical, the actual physical activity.
You're not showing. You're not saying here's how you do it. You're saying that the character Mo was not working on her belly button. He was working on something else.
Working on. These are the things that I'm afraid of. These are adult terms. You know,
they're adult, but they're also very colloquial, and they are not threatening. And they also help the parent, Bill, where the parent has decided they don't want to have anything to do with telling their children about sex. They don't want the school to do it. Well, somebody's got to do it. TV show is helping them.
All right, Dr. Jim Sadler joining us here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Katy Perry's Simpson appearance last night, in which one of the characters is kissing her belly button, and or at least he thinks he is, and she says to the character, well, that's not my belly button, but I didn't say stop. It's a very obvious sexual joke. Dr. Sadler is saying there are parents that don't want the schools to teach sex education, and maybe the parents don't. Is it time for television shows to help the parents with sex education by dropping some of these jokes in? 877-876-PHIL here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Should parents and TV programs team up in the sex education of their children? Maybe these Katy Perry jokes aren't so bad. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, and our number 877-876-PHIL, Dr. Jim Sadler from San Diego, California, this evening talking to us about the sexual content in popular programs maybe being an opportunity, right?
Yes.
For parents to explain sex to their children, because we have a time and a place that we're in these days, folks, where the schools may not be where we want kids to hear the, you know, sex education. The big debate going on about that.
And Phil, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but not only is the debate about whether or not we want children to hear of sex education in the schools, it's all, the debate is also increasingly about whether parents want to have that job. And so parents often will forego this until it's quite late in the child's upbringing, at which point they have heard it in a far more unsatisfactory way on the street, per se, and so forth. So putting sexual subject into a children's show is a great way, I think, between parents and the birds and the bees.
Give me another example before we take a phone call here. 877-876-PHIL. You mentioned the Katy Perry thing in The Simpsons. You mentioned Sesame Street.
Well, we have right now the Christmas holidays are here. This is obviously a time where children are focused more on Santa Claus. And it's a very sacrosanct subject, so you can't you cannot be that involved, and you don't want to be that graphic, but the story that you were alluding to, that we had written and was pulled off the shelf and then put back on and pulled off the shelf, I really had a hard time with the San Diego school system here, was one that eventually did make its way back onto the shelf, but not in the public library.
All right, now we're talking here. Dr. Sadler wrote a children's story for Christmas. It was a children's story?
It was not really a children's story. It was a illustration where Santa Claus and the elves, and it was a story introducing children to the elementary subject of masturbation.
And but you had a problem with the school system because it was Santa Claus. Santa Claus wasn't involved in this.
No, he wasn't. It was the elves, and it was a subject, it was a, we thought, very prime, primary subject that we very delicately introduced into the story, and we had a problem. They took it out of the library, we sued, they put it back in, they took it out again, and then we sued again, and I got a very good attorney with a civil rights organization. And we sued the two of the libraries to the point where they were going to literally have to go bankrupt unless they put our book in. So we were victorious there. And
so you sued two libraries to the point where they had no more money and they were forced to take this book.
Well, that was not why they took the book, though.
This is a book, and in it has a masturbation scene featuring the elves, and these libraries had to take this book.
Or they could have gone bankrupt. But the way you put that is you were making it out like I did something to them. They refused my book.
You had a lot of... Well, you're right. And look, Doctor, I don't want to argue with you. I mean...
Well, it sounds a little bit like you're taking the side of people that are against freedom of speech.
No, sir. Not at all. No, sir. Not at all. I just know that you had enough money to sue these libraries. They were going to go under unless they took your book, at which time you dropped the suit, and they were able to continue. And I just wondered if you saw it that way.
No, we do not see it that way. No, we do not see it that way. What I see is that they recognize that our book, featuring, yes, a masturbation scene, was going to be very healthy for the children.
877-876-PHIL is our number here on the Phil Hendry Show. Here is William in Burlington, North Carolina. Wait, hold on. Sorry, guys. I made the same mistake the other night doing our local show. Here is William in Burlington, North Carolina. You're going to have to put him on remote, please, on the Phil Hendry Show. William, how you doing? Welcome.
I'm good, Phil. How are you?
I'm very good. Go ahead, sir.
My only concern is that this guy could turn the children's shows, Dora the Explorer, Sesame Street, and the perverse things the way he has done this evening. The fact that I have two children that watch these shows, and the fact to think that...
I haven't turned any show into perverse. I haven't done anything to any show. I'm suggesting that since this material is already in these shows...
You're twisting these things to provide sexual direction for children. Children that have no idea of right or wrong or concept of a morality
to express themselves sexually,
as innocent as children's shows, sir.
I understand that, but you see, the content is in those shows anyway. And parents, I'm not saying you, but parents don't want to communicate this to the children, and they don't want the schools doing it.
So you're saying the big compromise.
That's where I would disagree with you 100%. Children should not learn about sex or education of sex until the age of 10, 11, 12 years
right.
old.
My kids, the scene I had in my book. Yes, the scene I had in my book with the elves masturbating was exactly what you're talking about. It takes a subject such as that to...
All right, we're going to have to take a break. William, thank you so much, sir, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back with your phone calls and Dr. Jim Sadler on the Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
I didn't even get to the part with the elves.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show. With me is Dr. Jim Sadler from San Diego, the doctor talking about children's shows. And, you know, they're children's shows, and then there are animated shows that are enjoyed by children, but also adults. Katy Perry, the actress and really the singer, more than an actress, has been in a couple of shows, Sesame Street and most recently The Simpsons last night, and has been involved in perhaps provocative situations on those shows. For instance, on Sesame Street, she was wearing a low-cut dress or low-cut some kind of a top. And then last night on The Simpsons, she made a reference to oral sex with a Muppet-type character named Mo when he said, I'll kiss your belly button. And she says to him, that's not my belly button, but I didn't tell you to stop. And that's a whole lot of setup there, Doc. I can't even imagine anybody knows what we're talking about.
Well, you know, and so if we can't understand it, the kids sure can't understand it, Phil. And that's why if we are reluctant to tell our children the facts of life, then and the schools don't want to, or we don't want the schools to, let's partner with these television programs and children's books, and let's insert some of this material into those shows to ease the child into it.
But you're talking about a child's book that you wrote where you introduced the subject of masturbation, and it was about Santa Claus and the elves. And
well, it wasn't about Santa Claus, and it was much more about the elves. And unless you read it, you really don't have... You shouldn't talk about it. Only really, I write my children's books so that only a child can understand them. And I can assure you that the way I write my children's books, a child understands them perfectly and knows exactly what I'm talking about. But when adults read them, the adult immediately misinterprets, and I have these problems like I had with the libraries down here in San Diego. We had a book burning one night.
You're kidding.
No, I am not kidding. We had some parents that wanted to burn my book until we filed a massive lawsuit. Fortunately, I had enough money and forced, and I hate to say this, but we really had to force this library to its knees financially, and we threatened in a financial way to slit its throat. Until it gave in and allowed us to put this book in the library.
To slit its throat. That's an interesting...
Well, but I'm saying, the library had to put our book in.
And this is a book that the parents wanted to burn, and yet you forced the library to take your book by way of a lawsuit. Don't you think that's contentious, and doesn't that put you at odds with parents, the very parents that you're hoping to partner with?
Well, we're hoping to partner with the television shows and the publishing so the parents will understand how to talk sex to their kids, not talk sex, but talk, give the facts of sex to their kids. If they hear a joke like this, I'm going to eat your belly button, or lick your belly button, or whatever he said. And she said, no, that ain't, but it feels good.
All right. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Let me go over here to Vicki. Hi, Vicki. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Dr. Jim Sadler. Go ahead, please.
I find this repulsive. I cannot believe that this guy calls himself a doctor. I think he ought to be called a pervert instead of a doctor. I cannot believe that he believes that children have to know about oral sex. You know, no one taught me or any of my brothers or sisters about that as we were growing up. But we found out about that stuff when we got older. It is just disgusting. And as far as writing a book about elves having sex, you know, what is wrong with you?
I never said that. I said, if the television program is going to introduce this material, maybe there's a way that we can...
They don't need to learn it on television. If they don't learn it at home, they will learn it at some age. You know,
right. And where are they going to learn it?
For misbehaving, where are they going to learn it? Before everybody stuck their nose into it. This world
if
was
they don't learn it at home,
off.
They're going to learn it on the streets. And you don't want them learning it on the streets.
What if they learn it off the streets? At least they're not going to be learning it definitely off of some pervert.
Oh, so
you
think it's better to learn it off of the streets? Off of a prostitute or a schoolmate.
It's better than learning it from someone like you.
Well, I don't know, ma'am. What you just said there, I think I'm a more quality person than you. You'd rather your child learn it from the streets. And I think
you
that makes
are
me
a
better person
to
than you.
Children.
And
a
no, you are. You are. And I'd like to meet your children because I bet your children are not as healthy as you think they are, given what you just said to me. And another thing,
teaching
you
them
think
things
you learned
that
about
they
oral
don't
sex.
Need to know.
I don't know.
Ridiculous.
Are your children in jail? Are your children in jail? Because you want your kids learning sex from prostitutes.
Hey, you know what?
She didn't say that. She didn't say that. She did say the street.
Right. You like your kids learning it on the street from a whore.
Good God.
Well, that's what she said. Yeah, I think you learned your sex from whores. From whores and from gangsters. Whores and gangsters.
Whoa.
Well, she's talking about me.
No, we don't. I'm sorry to tell you this, but we don't have any of those kind of people in my family.
You don't have any heterosexuals in your family?
Any what?
Wait a minute, Dr. Seth.
She says they don't have any heterosexuals in her family.
All right, what's going on here?
Well, I don't like her talking about me, and then she said her kids learned their sex from the street.
What street did your kids learn their sex on?
Well, you don't even know what school is, do you? You'd rather your kids learn their sex from a whore.
All right, okay. I can understand that. Apparently, we've got ourselves an impasse here. Thank you very much, Vicki, for your call. 877-876-PHIL. I think you were extremely offensive there.
Well, no. She said to me that I was crazy, and she said that her kids learned their sex from the street. And in my neighborhood, that means the local whore.
877-876-PHIL. Here is Richard in Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Go ahead, Richard.
Good evening, Phil. How's it going,
sir?
Phil? Can you hear me?
Fine.
Okay,
yes.
Great. Doctor, I'm not calling to argue with you, sir. Can you hear me, Doc?
Okay, go ahead, Richard. Otherwise, we got to move on, man. Okay?
Okay,
go,
great.
Man.
Yeah.
Go. All right. You got?
I got a 5-year-old boy that watches Dora the Explorer, and she also watches Sesame Street. And if sexual education was in any of those shows, honestly, I'd immediately turn them off. I mean, because then you'd have to go into teaching the children about HIV, AIDS, other STDs, condoms, and so on and so forth. So it wouldn't just simply be about sex. And another thing, I agree with the lady that just called. She was kind of over the line. But, man, let me tell you, you're a little cuckoo. I think you're crazy if you think that children should be taught in cartoons about sex. I think we should learn from the birds and the bees, from our dad, just like you and I were taught.
What do you mean, the birds and the bees? You want to learn from the birds and the bees?
Well, you know, your father told you the story, right? When you were 10, when you were 9, I'm sure your dad sat you on the couch.
And let me ask you a question, because I don't know what world you live in. What if the parents don't tell the kids about it?
Well, then that's what school is for, Doc. You know, 6th grade, 5th grade,
and what does the kid do? Go up to a teacher and say, my father didn't tell me about sex, will you please?
No, sir. I'm talking about school. School or your father. Not in cartoons.
You're not listening to me. If the father doesn't tell the kid the
No, what the man's saying is if the father doesn't give the facts of life, then the school does.
Yeah, but how, would the kid go to the school and say, excuse me, my father didn't tell me the facts of life. Would you please tell me?
Let me ask you a question.
Know?
Phil, how are you talking
how does the school know?
As a kid, Phil?
How does the school know? He's Phil's
Phil,
not talking to you. I'm talking to you.
Kid, Phil?
Phil's not talking to you. I'm talking to you.
Okay.
Okay? How does the school...
No, I'm talking. I'm talking.
Who taught you about this?
All right, look at... hold on. Richard, be quiet for a minute. I want to ask you a question, Dr. Sadler, all right? Whether the parents want to teach them or whether the school wants to teach them, what's that got to do with a cartoon show?
I wrote a book that was a great way of introducing kids to masturbation, all right? It was a Christmas book that was burned in a parking lot in San Diego. I had to file a lawsuit to get that book back into the library system. Now, if I have to do that because the parents don't want to teach these kids about the facts of life and because the schools are not going to teach the kids about the facts of life, then I can tell you we're in big, big trouble. I had to file a lawsuit.
In other words, how are these TV shows going to teach kids?
By the TV show or a book like mine, we'll introduce it. Like this character said, I'm going to, tongue your belly button.
He didn't say tongue. Is that what you're saying? Like slip in words like tongue and all of that stuff?
Well, I mean, yeah. You know, otherwise, you heard this guy that I was just talking to. Most parents, when it comes to sex, don't know anything about it, to be honest with you. They know how to do it, and that's the unfortunate aspect, but they can't talk to kids about it. Then, when someone publishes a book like I do about elves that masturbate, and it sounds insane, yes, but they burn it. And so we're left with nothing, Phil. We are left with nothing.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Martin on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, please.
Hi, real quick question.
Yes.
I'm wondering with the doctor, two questions. One, can he tell me the background of whatever doctorate he has? And number two, more importantly, I have three children. One's a 13-year-old, one's an 11-year-old, one's a 5-year-old. And I would certainly think that maybe 11 and 13 are appropriate for learning about masturbation, but the 5-year-old, clearly not. And I'm wondering why. What's his rationale for wanting to have the 5-year-old or any young children learn about masturbation when they're going to learn it in the 5th grade through their schools?
Well, I don't know if they're going to learn it in the 5th grade through their schools because we have parent groups that are opposed to that.
All right. So it's incumbent upon you to teach it to them?
Well, wait a minute. You asked me a question I'm going to endeavor to answer. The parent groups are opposed to it, which may be something... You didn't know that, did you? Because you said they were going to learn it in the 5th grade, and suddenly I'm telling you, maybe not. So that means then that if you're a responsible parent, you'll gear up and get ready to teach them yourself. Many parents don't want that responsibility. Now what's left? My book... the Simpsons and that. So
you're saying your book is clearly geared towards parents who don't want to teach their children about sex education?
Well, yeah, that's why we're having a problem, because we got kids that the parents don't want to teach it, they don't want the schools to teach it. I'm saying let's use a lot of these sex jokes to our advantage.
So clearly,
uneducated
parents.
Why do you say that?
Because, most parents who actually have some education are going to do one of two things. They're going to allow the schools at the appropriate age to teach their children sex education, or they're going to do it on their own venue. And so,
yeah,
clearly,
I know, but,
you're
you
doing
know,
it towards
this is something that parents
do.
Right, I know. Bill, everywhere I go, people are living in a world where they think everything's a lot better than it is. It's not. This man's assuming parents are going to teach the kids. They're not.
All right, so then that means you write a book about elves that masturbate?
Well, who else? I mean, what do you want me to do? Otherwise, you got people out there getting diseases. You got AIDS.
To provide this to them?
God help us that these kids get some new kind of sexually transmitted disease that disfigures the face or turns people violent. I don't know.
That sounds like science fiction.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if we can't teach kids sex education and these sexually transmitted diseases, they mutate into a new kind of a virus that makes people violent, or...
Yeah, that sounds like science fiction to me. All right, Martin, thanks for your call. 877-876-PHIL. turns people violent. We're talking to Dr. Jim Sadler here about, well, if kids can't learn sex from their parents and they can't learn it from the school, then why not use the Katy Perry jokes of the world and teach them sex on TV or in children's books, like the one he wrote about Santa Claus and the elves, in which Santa walks in on the elves while they're masturbating. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here on number 877-876-PHIL. Dr. Jim Sadler with us, Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy, next hour on Hover Parents. That's a stupid word. It was a word that somebody at an Atlanta newspaper came up with. Basically, it's a word that means parents that are sticking their noses into the coach's business on the football field and elsewhere in sports. I guess Hover is a lot shorter.
That is a much shorter term, Phil.
All right, but Dr. Sadler, what we're talking about with you, it has also to do with kids, only we're talking about younger kids. We're talking about, they're not preschool, but they're pre-middle school, right?
Well, pre-middle school, elementary to middle school, yes. But again, I listen to, since I've been on your program this evening, I have to tell you, I've dealt with parents who I would put into that category of not capable. And I'm sorry to have to say that, but I had the one lady I talked to who said that she'd rather her children learn sex from the streets, which is a euphemism for the prostitute trade, needles, you know, AIDS, and this sort of thing. Well, I can't even imagine a responsible person like that.
Well, I mean, but she might have been saying that because that's how low of an opinion she has of you.
Yes, I understand that, and I didn't exactly hear you coming to my defense.
Well, I'm not. No, Dr. Sadler, I would not. I apologize for that, but she was taking exception to a book that you wrote about Santa Claus walking in on the elves while they're, you know.
Yes, it was a book about masturbation.
Right. And here it is Christmas time, so she's not really going to be too keen on that. Now, you're right. You know, her opinion was not a very good one.
Well, and I'm not finished yet, but there was the gentleman right after her.
Now, her opinion's not a very good one, but your book about the elves masturbating ain't exactly a way to endear you to parents, and they're not going to want children to read that.
But then the other gentleman from Los Angeles who said that birds and the bees and when your dad... I'm finding that when it comes to sex, adults, parents are in no position to really teach their children much of anything. Most people are frightened of the topic. They don't, you know, they're not. I'm fortunate. I'm 52 years old. I have a 19, 20-year-old girlfriend. All right, I'm not saying anything.
Congratulations.
All right, no, but I'm not saying that to say anything other than I'm probably more sexually active than most of the parents that I'm talking to. So, and they may sense that, and they may be angry with me for that.
Angry with you for what? That you're introducing this? They're angry at you for introducing this topic to children.
I'm trying to do it responsibly, and I'm certainly not telling them to go out and pick it up on the street, so why would they be angry with me? Because I've got because I have more active life, and I also do a lot of weightlifting, which is, I forgot to mention that. Okay?
So you do a lot of weightlifting. So what? So what?
So what I'm sensing here, Phil, and I didn't want to have to spell it out, there's a lot of jealousy on the part of...
Oh, come on. The people, what they're saying, jealous of what? The people are saying that they don't want their kids being talked to that way. They don't want Katy Perry and her jokes. The children, they say, are children, and I agree, and if you're going to introduce that kind of sexual material, then it should be the parents doing it.
I'm telling you, these parents are incapable of doing it. The ones that I talked to tonight, they are a great cross-section of the sort of, forgive me for saying this, but the kind of undereducated, mountain, low hill, foothill trash. It's not mountain trash, it's not white trash.
What is the point here? You're talking about hillbillies. You are married to a...
She's my girlfriend.
All right, she's your girlfriend, a 19-year-old. And that's great, and that means that you're getting more than the average parent. When are we going to get off of all of that nonsense and talk about kids, little kids?
I am talking about the kids that are raised by this foothill trash. And
foothill trash? And these are the parents?
In my opinion, yes. And that's the great tragedy, I think, of today, that you have children that need sexual education. I wrote a great book about elves that masturbate. It got burned in a parking lot.
I would suggest that you go back and listen to a tape of this show tonight.
My Kimberly is taping it, my girlfriend.
Oh, good. Well, then when you get home, listen to it. And listen to the last 5 minutes of you talking about foothill trash and how you wrote a book about masturbating elves and how it was burned in a parking lot.
Okay, when am I supposed to hear?
You're going
to
hear it. That's exactly what I just said, only you'll hear yourself saying it.
Yeah, and then what?
And then I think you're going to want to kill yourself.
Well, mister, you sure don't know, nothing about psychiatry, whatever it is that I do. You don't know anything about it.
No, I don't. But thank you very much, Dr. Jim Sadler. First time we've had him on in a long time. We'll have on Vernon Dozier next as we talk about high school football, hovering parents, and their, busybody natures here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Psychology.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Christmas is the biggest holiday and means...
I have no doubt that everyone will find something in this compromise that they...
I'll just kiss your belly button.
You cannot abandon your child for even a minute.
That's very tough to swallow.
Kick your f***ing ass!
Good adjustment.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Through the looking glass we go, baby, every night. Places where the talk shows can't go. I'm hearing some plosives there in my windscreen. We'll have to check our windscreen in an hour. This hour, so-called hover parents risk some coaches' ire. And joining us hour to discuss that will be Vernon Dozier, a varsity football coach from Glendale, California. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, and online at philhendryshow.com, where you can watch live streaming video of our show. Live streaming audio of our show is also on the video, obviously. And you can listen to our hours and hours and hours, thousands of hours of archives. And as a matter of fact, we do a four-hour show every night, not just a three-hour show. The first hour is on our video cast. It's uncensored, and I sort of talk to you guys, my listeners, on the video cast, what we're planning on the show, about, what's going on in my life, and you can just see how frightening I look since I shaved my goatee, and it's pretty scary. Guys, just a word of the wise. When you shave a goatee, make sure you're not going to be exposing, like, three chins. You may want to rethink that one. And then, one of the big moments, I flipped a coffee bean from my freshly ground cup of coffee that was not ground, and it landed on the top of my Madagascar bass drum that sits behind me in the studio, and I pointed that out to everybody right there. 877-876-PHIL. So as I mentioned, we have Vernon Dozier on the show this evening as he talks with us about hover parents. This is a very interesting term, and I think it was from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Todd Holcomb, writing in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, a high school football coach in Georgia was asked by members of his school's booster club if they would review game film, and if they could review game film and make suggestions. The coach declined. Another Georgia coach was accused by a mother of costing her son a scholarship to an SEC school because the coach demoted him to second string. The player was 5'4" and had no offers. Another was included on a prayer list by a Baptist women's circle. The women prayed that he'd be fired. That is the world of the high school football coach. And joining us tonight is Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy. 26 years you've been at Belmar, Coach Dozier, and you know the world I'm talking about, don't you?
I know this world very well, Phil, and that the examples you gave there are of the milder examples. You know,
tell me about what have you come up against?
Oh, I've come up against. I've had fathers mostly. I don't get the mother. I get the fathers mostly. I came eyeball to eyeball with a father one day who that very thing that lady was talking about. He thought his son should be starting quarterback and felt that his son, if his son was starting at quarterback, would be seen by some of the college coaches. And then that boy would become a college first-string quarterback. I said, well, that's not going to happen. And I had a young man that we did start at quarterback who did go on to a Division I school and started at quarterback. And is now in pro ball. Phil, I've been up against this a million and one times. I know this world. And I've tried a lot of different ways of dealing with it.
And what would you say is the best way?
Well, the very best way is to tell the parents that they are not allowed any communication at all between. They are not allowed any communication at all, certainly during the game. And they're allowed limited communication with the coaches during the week. My feeling is quite simply this. I'll talk to you for the period of time that I'm comfortable talking to you, and then when the conversation's over with, with this one man that I was telling you about, I told him that he was never to speak to me again. That's how heated it got, you know.
Really?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, you're at a private school, so you have a little bit of an advantage over, I would think, coaches at public schools. A private school, you can always tell the parents, take your kid out of the school.
That's correct. But I've coached at the public school level, Phil.
Okay, what did you do then?
I did the same thing. I did the exact... there's no job on earth that's worth it, and if they don't want me around, if they don't think that I'm communicating enough at the public school level, but I've had such a record of success that most of the time, the schools are going to want to hold on to me, and they're going to want to tell the parents to go away, if you want to put a nice phrase on it. But I've had the same philosophy at private or public school. I will talk to you for the length of time that I'm comfortable, and the minute you bring up football, now the clock's ticking. Okay?
All right, so what does that mean, now the clock's ticking? So a parent comes up to you.
Yeah, the parent comes up to me. And it's talking football, and that's when the clock starts ticking.
No, but I mean, what if they're just saying, hey, how are you doing? How's your wife?
Oh, if they're asking about Sally, they ask about my grandkids, that's great. You know, and how you? Well, I'll talk forever with them if I've got the time, if they have the time. But the minute they bring up football, the clock's ticking. They've got 60 seconds to make sense, or I tell them that I actually don't even say goodbye. I just turn and I walk away at the 60-second mark.
Really?
Yeah.
How has that done for you?
Well, it doesn't help me with my relationship with the parents, but I don't care. The school is, as long as I'm winning football games, the school is not going to care. The number one, absolute number one, Phil, the number one thing at our school when it comes to football is me. And what do I mean by that?
It's not the kids? It's not the...
The kids are not number one. I'm number one because I'm the coach of the team. The stadium is named after me. I've got, of the 26 years I've been at Belmar Academy, 16 of those years we have won our league. And in three of those years, we won our division. Four of those years, we won our division. We've had players go on to Division I and Pro Bowl. And so I am the football program at Belmar Academy.
All right, let's get back to the beginning here. The parents that are busybodies, the hover parents, even though I pronounce it hover, my producer wants me to pronounce it hover, because I think that's how they pronounce it.
Yeah, they pronounce it that way down south, so maybe your producer's from down there.
No, he's from California, but sometimes I wonder. In any event, so the hover parents... let's get back to them. So you are the head coach of the team. You know what's best for the team.
I know what's best for that football team. And so when the parents start to talk football to me, they've got 60 seconds to make sense.
Now, what does make sense mean?
It means start making sense. You're going to be talking about football. You're talking my profession. So start making some sense. And if a man says to me, hey, coach, speaking of the team, my son should be starting. Well, right, he's already got one foot in it. You see, he's already sounding... stupid. And so Now he's wasted, I don't know, however long it takes you to say, hey, coach, my son should be starting. Okay, let's go ahead and time that. Hey, good, 1001. Can you do that for me, Phil?
What's that?
I'm going to say, hey, coach, my son should be starting. I'd like you to time that for me.
All right. No, I get your point.
No, I'm being very serious.
All right, I'll start timing.
Hey, coach, I'd like my son to start. How long?
It was 2.5 seconds.
That's 2.5 seconds out of that minute that he's just blown. He'll never get that back. His entire life, he'll never get that 2.5 seconds back. He wasted it talking about his kid. Now, that happens throughout an entire 60 seconds. It'll happen 30 times because most of these people want to talk to me about football, and they don't know anything about football. They know more. I don't know that they know anything about anything, but football they sure don't. So they've wasted my time. And I am the most important thing out there, the head football coach.
Talking to Vernon Dozier here about hover parents, parents who are sticking their nose into the coach's business, high school football. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Of 147 Georgia head coaches who responded to an email questionnaire, 71% said that issues with parents create significant problems for them. 71%. When asked what was the biggest change they had seen in coaching since they entered the profession, more coaches cited a worsening attitude among parents than anything else.
Exactly. And the reason why is because the schools have tolerated it. The schools have tolerated it. If these parents knew about football, they'd be football coaches, but they're not. And the reason why they're not is because they don't know anything about football. They watch it on TV. They watch a Sunday game. They watch a Saturday game. They come out and watch their kids sit on the bench, excuse me, but that's what most of them do. I'm the coach. And the reason why I'm the coach, Phil, is because I do know the game. I know what I'm doing. The parents never have anything to say to me that's worth 60 seconds of my life. And when a parent talks to me about football, they've just wasted 60 seconds of my life. Now, I'm 68 years old. I should have retired 3 years ago, but the school asked me to stay on. I don't know how much time I've got left, and if I've got people who are burning up full minutes of my life that I could be spending with my grandkids. And
all right, I'm going to ask you something, Vernon, and we're going to take a break and get some phone calls. There's an attitude that I'm hearing here that is, I understand.
But I'm the most important thing out there.
No, well, that's what you're saying. I'm just trying to ask you, you're the most important thing out there, and the parents don't get to have any communication with the kids as long as you're the guy out there, right?
That's right.
But the attitude you have is that they have nothing worth saying.
Well, not when it comes to football. No, they don't.
And that you have an impatience with them because you feel you are the only voice worth hearing. Am I right about that?
Yes, you're absolutely right about that. I am the only voice worth hearing. Yes.
And what do you mean when you say, so no communication with the parents between the players or you?
No. When we're playing a football game, I don't want any parent coming up to the bench and doing anything. When we're in a practice, I don't allow parents to come up to the bench or come up to the practice field and say anything. And I've tested them. We've got kids that I'll grab a kid by the helmet, I'll grab him by the face mask, and I'll yank him over to me to talk to him. And I know where the parents are sitting, and I'll glance up to see if they're looking. And if I haven't gotten their attention, I'll yank the kid's face mask again. And I will get the parents' attention, and then I'll yank the kid's face mask again so they can see that I'm in charge. See? Me.
And are you trying to provoke these people?
No. You're missing the point.
Well, if you've got a kid and you're yanking him by the face mask,
I'm showing that parent that this is your kid. Well, guess what? I've got him by the face mask, and I'm yanking his head this way and that. Now he's mine on this football field. That's how I deal with it. That's the only way to deal with it. That's the only way I'm going to deal with it. And I think you'll find, Phil, that parents, they know their play. If I tell them straight up, you ain't going to tell me how to do it. I tell you. Then they know their place. And they're as meek as a lamb. But I can tell you, I've had many, many parents who have thought that they were all this and a bag of chips. And I had to beat them down.
Well, I tell you what you ought to do, man, is get in touch with these people in Georgia.
I would.
Because they're, and this is a problem across the country. Now, I don't know that your solution is the solution, and that is to sort of lord it over these parents and say, you know, if your kid wants to play football, he's going to play for me and it's going to be my way.
Well, that's exactly what it's going to be. I've never had it better than at a private school. At a private school, I can do whatever I want, and there's no parent that can touch me. I'll start who I want. I'll yank off the field who I want. I'll run the team the way I want to run that team. You ought to hear some of these parents crying like, oh, man, crying like little girls. And ain't nothing they can do about it.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. A hover parent, and how do you deal with these parents that are constantly telling the coach how to do things? There's Vernon Doger. He's the head football coach at Belmar Academy. Boy, that guy has got, he's in charge. Basically, he tells them that you got 60 seconds to talk football with me, and then I'm going to turn around and walk away, and even go so far as to yank the kids' heads in their helmets. Your calls with our guest Vernon Doger next at 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL next hour. It's the News Hour with Bud and Robert here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Are you in playoffs right now?
Yeah, we have a game this coming Saturday. This is it for us, though. This is for the league, and then they're going to be a division game. California's got so many schools.
All right, we're here with Vernon Doger from Belmar Academy in Glendale, our number 877-876-PHIL, and we're talking here about the hover parent. And the reason why we call it, I don't think it's a very good word, but we're talking about parents that are sort of there, and they're hanging over the coach's shoulder, and they're sort of asking the question of the coach, when are you going to play my son, and when are you going to do this, and when are you going to do that? And you get a lot of these parents that want their kids to play. Now, I want to ask you something. I have a right to ask about my kid, don't I, if he's on the team?
Well, what do you mean?
If he's playing for you, I have a right to ask about my kid, right?
It depends on what you're asking. What are you asking?
Well, say, how is my son doing?
I won't discuss that with you. I won't discuss that with you.
Why can't I discuss that with you about how my son's doing?
The reason why I won't discuss it with you is if I tell you that he's doing good, then you're going to get the idea that he's the next Brett Favre. If I tell
you... No, I won't.
But hold on for a minute, Phil. Don't. Just trust me when I tell you, I've talked to enough of these parents. Now, you say, no, you won't. Yes, you will. I've talked to enough parents, and I know enough about parents, and I know enough about coaching. You got to understand, this has been my profession. They named the stadium after me. They named the stadium after me even before I retired. Now, there's meaning to that, and I'm not trying to blow my own horn, but what I am saying is people know that I know. So, no, I will not talk about your son, and no, you can't ask me why. And
can I even ask you a question, what position's he going to play?
Your son can tell you what position he's going to play. These are stupid questions. Excuse me, Phil, but these are stupid questions, you know.
So I can't bring up the topic of my son at all?
Not during football season, no. I will not talk to parents about their kids. I won't talk to parents about what position their kid's going to play. I won't talk to a parent about why their kid isn't playing. You've got 60 seconds, and if you start in with my son this, my son that, I'll let you have your 60 seconds, and then I will turn without even saying goodbye and walk away.
I have to ask you this. Has anybody tried to take a poke at you?
What do you mean? Did you try to slug me or try to take a swing on me?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never had that happen, no. Why? I'm not physically provoking anybody. I no one's ever done it, and I suspect it's because I have not ever physically provoked anyone, and also because I don't think anybody, I don't know anybody that have the guts to do that. You know, I'm the head football coach there for 26 years with Dozier Stadium. You see, who's going to have the guts to swing on me?
All right, 877-8, I'm just curious, you know, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking here with Vernon Doger from Belmar Academy on how much he, listens to parents during the football season. Here is Spence in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Spence, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Vernon Doger. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Coach. You know, I've been listening to you, and I heard you proudly talk about putting the feet down on parents. You know, if nobody provoked you, how did you put feet down on parents?
Well, I mean, I'm talking verbally. I tell them that you are not going to talk to me about your son, about what school he's going to go to when he leaves high school, about what position he's going to play, about how come he didn't play as opposed to another kid did play. And none of that stuff I talk to parents about.
Well, you know, these people did rear and raise these kids before you got a hold to them. And you need to be real careful because you're going to look at the wrong parent one day and be snatching on a kid's helmet. And he might make you eat some fuck shot. That's a lesson in 60 seconds.
No, it ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen. I take that kid by the helmet, and I yank his head, and I look up there. You know the one that's usually looking at me? The mom. Dad ain't going to do nothing.
Well, no, this man is talking like you're going to provoke some people.
Well, what? Oh, look, he just hung up. You know why that guy hung up? Because he's afraid, and that's the kind of fear that I smell on people. See what I'm saying?
And well, yeah, he did hang up, but he hung up because I think you were a little bit rude there, too. When you talk about grabbing a helmet and yanking somebody around...
Only way that the high school football coach is going to survive with these parents that are too stupid to talk about football, but their egos are in the way because daddy might have wanted to play football when he was in high school and he wasn't good enough, okay? And I have to, I've got to beat them down, and I use that term psychologically, first of all, to get that father to understand you're not playing football, your son is, and your son's barely playing football.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Chris. Go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show, Chris, with Coach Dozier.
Hey there.
Yes, sir.
Hey, is this Vernon?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, are you Vernon?
Yes, sir, it is. How you doing? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Are you going to put me on the
table? Well, I'm not really asking you. I'm not really asking you how you're doing. What do you want?
Oh, I was going to tell you.
He doesn't care how you're doing, pal. Just ask your question to me. I'm Coach Dozier. What do you want?
I've got four kids, and if you touch my son on
woman?
His football helmet, I'd come down on that hill,
woman?
And I would
how many mothers?
Your ass. You no, get thrown and stomped in the mud if you put
mothers,
your hand on my son and jerk him around.
How many mothers? How many mothers do I have to deal with? Four kids, four mothers?
All right.
Hello?
Phil Hendry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. And the weekends, as the days get shorter, and we get deeper and deeper into the autumn months heading into wintertime, football season is coming to its climactic weekends. Many high schools across the country have already celebrated their championships. Here in California, I think we still have one weekend to go, and we have Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy on the line as they have a league title game coming up this weekend. We're talking about parents that have been continually, perhaps overly inquisitive or overly busybody in their approach to the team. And my question is, Vernon, before we go back to some phone calls, you know, parents are going to be interested. These are their kids.
I know that. And I want these parents more than anything in the world to enjoy our football program that I have built to enjoy coming out to the stadium, but they cannot forget the name of the stadium is Dozier Stadium. They can't forget who it is that walks the sidelines. It's me. I want them to enjoy our football program through enjoyment of my legacy and what I'm going to do for their kid that may not have all the talent in the world. And when I tell a young man, and he looks at me and he says, thank you, that you are lucky to be on this team. Why can't the parent understand that, you see?
Maybe that's a little too condescending.
A little too condescending for the parent?
For the parent, yeah.
Well, if their son can look at me and say, thank you, Coach Dozier, for allowing me to wear this uniform, even though I'm not particularly talented, in point of fact, I you know, probably shouldn't even be on a football field because I could die. And that's something else that these parents don't understand. You know, their kid goes out for football, and they think that kid is going to go to Notre Dame or USC, right? Or maybe to Nebraska, or maybe to Alabama, or maybe to Penn State. And what they don't know is that that boy that they think is going to be the next Joe Montana, he might get himself killed. See?
What does that mean? The kid doesn't have the talent they think he has.
Not only does he not have talent, he's going to get killed on the field. So I keep that kid. You want me to talk to the parent about that? See, they want to know more about their kid, and they come up to me and tell me, how's Billy doing? Well, Billy is probably going to die on the football field because he doesn't know what he's doing. I'm not going to say that. I'll just keep the kid out. And then they come up to me and they say, why aren't you playing, Billy? And that's when I turn and walk away.
Well, why not just tell them your kid is going to die?
Because they're not going to believe that, and the kid's going to cry like a little... I've seen these kids cry. I can't have that on my football team. I've built too much of a reputation to have a kid weep like an old lady, you see, on the sideline.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. You know, you got this. You got a very interesting way of doing things.
And it's been a very successful way, too.
877-876-PHIL, talking to Coach Vernon Doja here from Belmar Academy on his football philosophy and how he deals with these hover parents that apparently are not, not on his time. Here is Dave in San Jose. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Dave, go ahead, please.
Hey, Coach Dozer, I just wanted to say a couple of things. One, you have a huge God complex, which is just freaking ridiculous, in my opinion. You think you're all that. You're a coach.
Maybe I am. Maybe I am all that.
Okay. No,
that's something you don't know about.
You don't like people interrupting you. You don't interrupt me.
No,
I get your. I get no. Hey, no, no.
I got a stadium named after me. What are you?
There was no question. It was a statement. What are you?
What are you? Do you have a stadium named after you? No. No, you don't. I do.
Would you let me finish? I was getting ready to pay you a freaking compliment if you'd let me finish.
Don't tell me what to do.
Hold on. Just listen to the man.
But I don't want him telling me what to do.
I understand that, but I'll control. This is my sideline, okay? So, Coach, let me say who's talking. Dave has the floor right now.
Thank you very much, Phil. I was getting ready to say that I understand that you're a good coach. I mean, you had a stadium named after you. That's totally cool. But you have let that go to your ego. That's one thing I wanted to say. The second thing I wanted to say is if I ever saw you treat my kid the way that you treat those kids by grabbing them, and you're afraid you're not going to get poked, I would walk down to the sideline during the middle of a game and beat you to the ground, dude.
No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I would.
You know what would happen. I'd sue you.
How about,
and then you'd owe me your paycheck every day of your life after that. You don't want to get sued,
what?
Do you?
And you know what? It would be worth it to beat your sorry old butt to the ground.
You would belong to me for the rest of your life. How do you
and
like
that's
that?
Fine. That would
Dave
be fine.
Dave belongs to Coach Dozier. And I can go down to your house and tell you what to do. I'd say, tell you what, Dave, this week you don't have to give me your paycheck if you do some push-ups for me or mow my lawn. You'd have to do that.
No, whoa. Hold on.
No, this guy, he doesn't understand. If you do that, you get sued and you owe a man for the rest of your life.
And he wants to do that. You know what would happen?
He wants to have a sign on his back that says Coach Dozier's boy. That's what he wants.
And you know what would happen? You would come
and
over
your son
my house.
Would see that. Your son would see that.
Okay.
Your own son would see that you belong to me.
Okay, we get it already. Can we settle our disputes? You know, Coach, with all due respect, you provoke this in people.
How do I? I'm in a stadium that's named after me. Okay? This guy's coming down and telling me what to do.
Well, you're yanking the kid's head all over the place.
You ain't never seen a football coach grab a kid by the face mask. What kind of babies are we talking about here? Of course you do. You get his attention that way.
Well, you said you'd do it to make sure the parents saw it.
That's right.
Can I just say one more thing?
Right. Dozier Stadium.
Okay, go ahead, Dave.
This is what I want to say. There's actually two parts, and then I'll let you guys get back to your show. One part is, if you want, I'll fly you to wherever you want, and I will beat you to the ground right now. And number two, you said, now number
That's
two...
Okay, yes, okay.
No, wait,
I'd like you to beat me to the ground in Paris, France.
Okay, I will fly to Paris, France tomorrow. You want me to go? I'll go.
Yes, I would.
Okay. Now, my second thing is...
What the hell?
Wow, dude.
I want to see this Joker fly to Paris, France, and stand there waiting for me. That would be worth it.
All right. And then what else, Dave?
Okay. And my second thing is, you said that, I beat you to the ground, and then you come over and you said, you don't have to pay me a paycheck and give me some push-ups. You know what I would do? I would hand you your money and beat you again. Because you already have my money. I'll just keep beating you every time you ask me to do push-ups.
I got to have your money for the rest of your life, see?
No, I understand that. I will give you money.
Then I'd have to sue you again. I'd have to sue you again, and that means your wife would then belong to me. Now we got ourselves a little bit of a party.
Okay, you see what you're doing? You try to provoke people.
Why?
Oh, your wife would belong to me. In other words, I understand, Coach, that you're the coach. I understand the stadium's named after you. I don't think anybody is going to question that you are the coach, but it is a school, you know?
What is that supposed to mean?
What it means is it's a school, so the children are in a school to learn, and the parents have a vested interest in the training of these children, so they have every right in the world, you know, to ask.
It's a private school.
That doesn't matter. You know, here's one thing about a private school. You have a charter, and the charter has to be adhered to, or legally, you can be called into question. If you have a charter that says, you know, we treat our kids thus and so, and you don't, you guys could get sued. Now, you know, you want to provoke people. This is the way that they're going to respond.
All right. Have you ever seen anybody beat up Vince Lombardi? No. This guy beating me up, that would be like beating up Vince Lombardi. That's how good I am.
One other thing, you said that the parents should be thanking you. No, the parents should be thanking you. You know what? In my opinion, I would take my kid off the team because I wouldn't want someone like you being their role model. Because
you're the kind of guy that would beat up Bill Walsh. That's me. I'm Bill Walsh.
Oh, that's how good you are, huh?
That's right. That's right. And yet, this man wants to take his kid off my team because he doesn't recognize how good I am. And that's the sad thing about parents today.
That they don't recognize how good you are.
That's the essential point that I've been trying to make for the last 45 minutes on your rotten...
Hello? So he hung up, Dave. Thank you, though, for your call, sir. I appreciate it. No, it's okay. You know, he hung up, you know. But thanks for your call, sir. Appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. Is he back?
Yeah, I'm back.
Get out of here. 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show. Next hour, we have whatever the hell we've got. We got our news hour with Bud and with Robert. We'll be back.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry.
Well, welcome back here, and Monday it is, and it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and we thank Coach Dozier and the stadium that's named after him. And also, who was our first guest this evening? I can't remember. He was so memorable, or she, or it. In any event...
Well, I'll look it up.
You better look it up, yeah. 877-876-PHIL. Oh, it was Dr. Jim Sadler. I thought it was a she.
Well, just about...
Don't let him hear you say that, man, because you know he lifts weights. So, Dr. Jim Sadler, thank you very much, sir, for your point of view on sex education for the young, and good luck with your book on the elves masturbating. Is that guy kidding or what?
I don't know. I'd love to read it, see what the controversy is.
You'd like to read it to see what the controversy is?
You don't know what the controversy is. Well, yeah, I know what the controversy is, but that I burned it and everything.
Yeah, you know, some people, I can imagine a book about elves doing what he had them doing, which I'm not going to repeat here, but let's just say it's crude. They were the elves doing something crude together. Yeah, I can imagine people burning that. Hell, I might have been right alongside of them.
You don't want to burn books, though, man. You get a damn wrong friend of mine with that.
Yeah, well, you know something, man? Yeah, I understand about you don't want to burn books because it's a Nazi thing to do. I get that. But a guy that writes a children's book about the elves masturbating and Santa walking in on them, I'd have no problem burning that book. I'm not saying it shouldn't be published.
So you are coming out in favor of book burn.
Whoa, wow, look at you, man.
Well, that's what you're saying.
Well, what do you guys... Bud, listen to me, will
you? You are coming out in favor of it, though.
Listen to me. I'm not saying book burnings are good. No, I'm not in favor of that. But I would not, I would laugh. I think it's funny to burn a book like that. They're going to keep on publishing it. Let them. And they're going to keep on selling it. Let them. And they'll put it in a library. Let them. And I'll burn it. You know?
Yeah, you burn enough of them, though, they won't make no more.
Yeah. It ain't like Lay's potato chips, you know. Oh, they'll make more. Don't worry about it. All right. Here is a list of cult foods with cult followings. You ever thought about that? I don't even know if this is... But these are foods that have cult followings, and a couple of them I recognize, and a couple of them I wouldn't go near with your lips, pointing at Bud, or yours, Robert.
Thank you.
For the first time in nearly 16 years, the McRib is available at every McDonald's in the United States. Until recently, the barbecue pork sandwich was only available for limited periods at select locations, inspiring websites for fans to track the beloved menu item down. But the McRib is not alone in its cult status. See, now, I never knew that about the McRib.
Yeah, it's pretty bitchin'. People like the rib sandwich and everything.
I would never in my wildest dreams think that the McRib had cult. So was it like kind of back in the day, Coors beer was only brewed west of the Rockies. And so all of my friends back east, they wanted Coors beer, you know?
Yeah, well, I remember you told me about that. But the McRib... And a pork, you know, stacked pork is better than that.
Yeah, we're not talking about, like, pea water. We're talking about... Watch your language, pea water.
We're not talking about that.
Well, I don't know, man, whether the McRib's any good either.
Are you kidding me? It's pork.
Yeah, pork, yeah. Nonetheless, the McRib is not alone in its cult status. Here are 9 limited edition foods that elicit cravings in legions of fans. Whether they're released only once a year, like Girl Scout cookies... Is that a cult food? I mean...
I like a lot of people, man. You buy them, though, right?
Oh, yeah, I buy the Girl Scout cookies. Who don't? Everybody likes those.
Well, what one do you like?
I used to like those chocolate mint ones. The only kind of mint one that I like, too. You guys don't like them?
Nah, not really.
You don't like them, but you're waiting for that McRib sandwich, huh?
Yeah, I like the McRib.
All right, so Girl Scout cookies don't get you, but the McRib sandwich. All right.
Well, it's because it's piled pork.
Yeah. What do you mean piled pork?
It's kind of like a piled pork.
I don't know what that is, man. Piled pork and stacked pork and all that crap. What does that mean?
Well, it's just it's good. It's a good tasty, you know, stacked up pork. You know, pork on pork.
I don't even speak that ridiculous language. Anyway, here are 9 limited edition pork on pork. Sounds like a bad porn movie.
Watch it, man.
Why? Because I looked at you when I said that?
Yeah.
All right. In any event, here are 9 limited edition foods that elicit cravings in legions of fans. Pork on pork.
Watch it.
Whether they're released only once a year like Girl Scout cookies or celebrate a specific season like Starbucks. Oh, this one I've heard of. Starbucks pumpkin spice latte.
Yeah, that's big, man. A lot of people like that.
That's funny. I hear people ordering that now, about 2 years running now. I've heard about this pumpkin spice latte. I wouldn't go near that, man, if it was the last thing to drink on God's good green earth.
Yeah, you don't like none of them. You don't have no fun with your life or nothing.
Well, yes, I do, man, but I want a cup of coffee. I want a cup of coffee. I don't want pumpkin spice latte. You know what the funny thing of it is? If I actually had one, I'd probably become addicted.
You would, man. I mean, I'm telling you, it's really good.
Anyway... Starbucks pumpkin spice latte. They get the facts on some of your favorite foods that are available for a limited time only. So we got the McDonald's McRib. The last time the McRib was offered at every McDonald's across the country was in 1995. But from November the 2nd through early December 2010, this sweet and savory barbecue sandwich is available at all 14,000 U.S. locations. Over the last 3 years alone, the boneless meat sandwich. Uh-huh.
What do you mean?
No, nothing. On a sesame seed bun has hit sales numbers in the $60 million range, and that's just when it was in limited availability. It even has multiple Facebook fan pages and a McRib locator, so we can only imagine the damage fans will do now that they can get it at any Mickey D's.
What do you mean like that, man?
I don't eat pork, man. Now, I know that occasionally I used to have those pork, but I don't eat pork because I'm swearing off pig.
Yeah, how come?
You know why, because pigs are like dogs. They're intelligent, and I like them.
Man, what are you talking about, man? You know, pork sandwich. Like, you remember how you loved them pork ribs?
I knew I used to like pork ribs. I don't eat them anymore. And here's one more thing. A pork sandwich, if you really want to talk about good pork sandwiches, whether it's stacked pork or pork on pork or whatever the hell you guys call it, McDonald's?
Well, yeah, what about it?
I wouldn't trust that at all, man. Excuse me for saying. Ew!
What are you talking about, man?
Well, look at that place, this big, funky meat factory, man. Now you're eating pork? Dude, you don't know what floor that's fallen on.
Are you kidding me, man? It's not taken off the floor.
You don't know that. You don't know that. Next time you eat a pork sandwich from McDonald's, think about the floor that it just dropped on, and the guy picked it up real quick.
Oh, man. You know, I'm about to have me one right after we get off the air. You're talking like that.
I'm sorry, but somebody's got to say it. So you're going to bite into that pork sandwich, and that pork sandwich you're eating, it fell on the floor in the bathroom because the dude had gone in there.
Cut it out, man.
He's all bawling and stuff. McDonald's Shamrock Shake is number two. I wonder who wrote this article. This is Bryn Manino from Women's Day. Women's Day. Do they have an interest, any kind of stock with the McDonald's? Anyway, the McDonald's Shamrock Shake. Since 1970, McDonald's has been offering this green milkshake made from vanilla ice cream and mint flavoring at select locations throughout March to celebrate St. Patrick's Day. Since it's not available every year at all locations, fans have found a way to get it if it doesn't come to them. Enter shamrockshake.com, which features a search tool for finding a nearby McDonald's. Blah, blah. Number three, the Starbucks Pumpkin Latte. We already heard about that. Number four, the Nabisco Malamars. The marshmallow cookie, first sold in Hoboken, New Jersey 97 years ago, is nearly impossible to find that during warm months. And they make those. Everybody makes those. Oreo makes one of those.
No, not like those, man.
Yeah, like those. Next up, the Necco Sweethearts Conversation Hearts from Necco Wafers. The next one up, number six or whatever it is, is the Girl Scout cookies, the Thin Mints, the flavors of Girl Scout cookies. Thin Mints, anyone, are probably more well-known than the organization's goal to help girls build character and skills for success in the real world. Number eight, Dreyer's Limited Edition Eggnog Ice Cream. Oh, look at this, man. Number nine, White Castle Sweet Potato Fries.
You know, a lot of people are into sweet potato fries now, kind of better for you.
I know. Who was serving up the sweet potato fries the other day, man? We were in some restaurant. I forget where. It might have been. Nah, it couldn't have been In-N-Out. And then finally, number 10, Cozy Turkey and Stuffing Sandwich with Cranberry Sauce. What the hell is that?
I don't know.
Everyone knows the best thing about Thanksgiving dinner is the leftovers, especially if they can be worked into a sandwich. Thus, the appeal of Cozy's Turkey and Stuffing Sandwich with Cranberry Sauce. Cozy?
I think that's the name of the guy.
C-O-S-I. And it's served during the weeks leading up to and just following Thanksgiving. The sandwich is made from roasted turkey, cranberry sauce, and Cozy wipes it on his armpit just before. Well, that's great.
Are you kidding?
No, that's what it says. Look.
Oh, you're lying, man.
What if he did, though? Yes, our cranberry sauce, our turkey, our stuffing, and just, you know, right before we package it up, I wipe it on one of my armpits.
Oh, God!
We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Toll workers in Florida are banned from decorating their booths with Christmas gear because some drivers complain, and, you know, why be happy? It's Christmas. Plus, Kathy Griffin gets booed by our troops for a Bristol Palin joke. Ha ha. Phil Henry Show. World-famous.
Phil Henry. World-famous.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
You cannot abandon your child for even a minute.
Now let's talk about Dancing with the Stars. Dancing with the Stars, yes.
He's a really good kid. He really liked baseball, too. He used to hang out with a lot of people.
I have no
baseball.
Doubt that everyone will find something in this compromise that they don't like.
I forgot he was black tonight.
Well, I hope you knew to use a condom.
That is a threat on the radio.
Things are bad.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch and where through the looking glass we take you to places other talk shows wish they could go, but they can't. They can, man. This hour, toll workers in Florida are banned from decorating their booths because it's a bunch of, Jesus stuff, and we can't have that now, can we? Plus, Don Meredith has died, and Kathy Griffin gets booed by our troops over a Bristol Palin joke. PhilHenryShow.com. That's PhilHenryShow.com. 877-876-PHIL is our number, and online at PhilHenryShow.com, where you can take a look at live streaming video of our show and listen to live streaming audio. We also have thousands of hours of archive material. We have the Phil Classic podcast. We have the daily podcast. We have our mini podcast. We have our news feed and comment section and email. It's all there at PhilHenryShow.com. Soon to come this week, merchandise store will be opening up, and we're going to be selling prior to Christmas our best of CD collection, our classic best of CD collection going back to 1997. So I think it'll be a fun time. All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're going to start off here with, well, either one. I mean, the Florida Booth thing.
Right, Kathy Griffin and all that stuff.
All right, Kathy Griffin. One of the things about entertaining troops these days that's different from, let's say, oh, I don't know, when the USO was out there, let's say, back in World War II, or when Bob Hope was doing his thing in Vietnam, there was a clear rapport, I suppose, between entertainer and troop, you know, and that kind of went out the window here with Kathy Griffin. She did a Bristol Palin joke, and she got booed. Now, in reading the article, they say that she seemed confused. So when I read a story like this, I'm going to ask myself, well, did Kathy Griffin do the joke knowing full well it would not be well received, and it was just her little slam on Palin and too bad what the troops think? Well, I don't know if that's necessarily a winning strategy, you know?
Yeah. You're going to have people be like you.
Yeah.
Well, I know that. So why go out there and tell a joke?
Yeah, nobody's going to like the joke. Why would you tell it?
Exactly. But I thought, who knows? You know, she's a little whack. Or maybe she thinks she's so marvelously funny that they'll laugh at anything. After all, she was on stage there with Anderson Cooper. Remember that New Year's Eve to forget? She sucked there. But Cooper laughed at everything she said because that's what he was instructed to do. Now, the troops at the Marine Corps Air Station in California, wherever that is, we used to have one here in El Toro, I don't know where this would be, booed Kathy Griffin at VH1 Divas Salute to the Troops. VH1's Divas Salute to the Troops. For a joke taunting Bristol Palin for seemingly being the only contestant in the history of Dancing with the Stars to actually gain weight during the show. Pretty funny joke, but
just the wrong person.
Well, yeah. As criticism for Kathy mounts a day after the special aired, sources told PopEater.com, VH1 nearly cut the ugly moment out of the show. As criticism for Kathy mounts, it says. Really? Well, we'll see. After all, it is coming to us from PopEater.com, so you'll forgive me. The Wall Street Journal, you ain't. There was talk at VH1 about editing out the joke and the reaction to it, but in the end, we decided to leave it in. A network insider tells me it made the event feel live, and Kathy's a big girl. It's not the first time one of her jokes has failed. Oh, that's gotta sting! Let's listen here, folks. A joke at the expense of Bristol Palin by comedian Kathy Griffin doesn't go over very well here with the Marines.
Yeah, let's talk about Dancing with the Stars. Dancing with the Stars. Yes. Yes. We're going to talk it out. We got two words. Bristol Palin. Yeah, that's right. Come on. Come on. You're going to like this. She's the only contestant in the history of the show to actually gain weight. No, come on. Come on. She gained like 30 pounds a week. I swear to God. It was fantastic. She's like the white precious. She's like the white precious. You can boo louder than that. Come on, boo me. I love it. I love it. War is hell. War is hell.
Okay. Anyway, in case you missed it, there it was. That was the joke. This is the first time Kathy has used the Palin clan in her act. Last year, she walked the red carpet with the father of Bristol Palin's baby, Levi Johnson, at the Teen Choice Awards and even announced and joked they were dating. She also took Levi along with her to Sarah's hometown of Wasilla, Alaska. During the failed bit, Kathy seemed unsure of what exactly the crowd was booing. I didn't hear that.
It sounded to me like she was expecting a boo.
Yeah.
That's what it sounded like to me. So that's another piece of rotten reporting you did, Pop Eater. During the failed bit, Kathy seemed unsure of what exactly the crowd was booing. No, she sounds like she, I agree with you, she sounds like she expected the boos. However, the war is hell thing was a little weird. I'm sure Kathy was surprised by the reaction a friend of Griffin tells Pop Eater, a friend, a deep personal close friend who would not be named, but also has some other interesting things to say. She's not sure if it was the fat part or the Palin part of the joke that the troops protested. However, if you think one audience reaction is going to get her to stop telling Palin jokes, you're wrong. That family is comedy gold, even if our men and ladies in uniform don't seem to think so. Of course. Well, they're comedy gold with some people. And like we were saying before the show, it ain't Hollywood out there. It's America. And Hollywood is great for Hollywood. But there is a sort of an insular. It blows my mind personally. There is a really insular. There's an insular. It's an atmosphere among some performers that when they talk about how much they think, say, Sarah Palin sucks, or how much they hated George Bush, or how much they think this is wrong or that's wrong, and they speak of it openly, they think everybody agrees with them, you know, and they don't. And then they get out into the world and they hear like Marines booing their ass. But she sounded like she was expecting it. Now, here's Bristol Palin's statement. The audience's reaction to the comedian spoke volumes, and the decent people I know would probably have booed her, too. This is Bristol Palin speaking in a statement to Fox News Pop-Tarts. I hope people didn't have to pay money to hear her negativity and criticisms. I don't think so. It was for the troops. I hope not, anyway. And can we find out also, Bud, where was this?
It's at a Marine station in California.
I know that. Which one?
Like the one at El Toro.
They closed El Toro. At least I thought they closed El Toro. So it's a different one, man. All right, so good luck there with that one, man. And then the other story that we had here was the toll worker story. And this has to do with toll workers in Florida who were decorating their booths so that they could have the Christmas spirit, right? And some pains in the ass that are driving through these booths, they were protesting the decorations. It bothered them. You know, I don't know what to say about people, but because their lives are lousy to begin with, because they get out of bed on the wrong side anyway, because they're never going to be anything other than what they are, just pruned up, dried out, worthless, complaining bastards, and because their wives and their children hate them, they have to make everybody else's life miserable. So they pull up to the toll booth, where some guy that doesn't make a whole lot of money has decided to put some lights and maybe a little bit of tinsel, whatever, around his toll booth, and they complain. So one toll worker got upset. Her name is Lana Fontanetta. She was coming to work decked out in Christmas-themed clothes. She had bells on her earrings. She had green and red scrunchies in her hair. She's celebrating her favorite holiday. They had the annual tree, and the garland was put up in the window, but on Saturday, it was gone from public view because these pain-in-the-asses that come out at Christmas time want all the Christmas decorations taken down because it's their constitutional right to go around and crap on everybody's good time. See, one of the things that, I don't know whether they're atheists or what they don't understand is, I'm not a religious guy, but I like to see Christmas decorations. Why? Because it's a holiday festival. Holiday!
Yeah, what does that mean?
It means it's a holiday festival. For Christians, it's the birth of Jesus. For pagans, it's Yule. For Phil Hendry, it's a holiday festival.
I don't understand a holiday festival.
What do you want me to tell you, man? This is the time of year where we have a winter holiday festival, and there's really cool stuff that goes on. This is Phil Hendry telling you now, okay?
Yeah.
The Christians are having Jesus' birth. I like that. I think that's great. The pagans, they're having the Yule log. I like that. I think that's great. Some other people are doing the solstice thing. I think that's cool. And some of them do a tree, and some of them have a manger, and Phil Hendry enjoys all of it. You see?
Yeah, but I mean, ain't you supposed to call it Christmas?
I call it Christmas. It's not going to kill me to call it Christmas. Now, understand, I don't go to church on Christmas. I did, and I don't anymore. And it's not because I don't like church. It's because it's too crowded. It's just, you know.
Yeah, you used to go to, like, the midnight and everything, didn't you?
I went to midnight mass. I was raised Catholic, so midnight mass was a big thing for everybody. Midnight mass. But I, personally, I got to be honest with you, I don't go to midnight mass because, to be honest, there's a lot of jackasses. First of all, there's a lot of non-Catholics. I don't know what their problem is. What the hell are you doing going to Mass? And they come busted in there like a bunch of pains in the ass. They're taking over all the pews. They think they're at a ball game because they're, hey, Bill, I got a seat up front. Let's go. I mean, what is that? And then here come all the jack Catholics like me that go to Mass once or twice or three times a year. And I thought, you know what, I'll do everybody a favor and not go, for the real, you know, devout Catholics can go. And that's fine. And I don't have a problem with that. But sometimes I do and sometimes I don't, man. I mean, that's just where it's at. I don't get bent out of shape. Atheists and these people that are getting, there's something wrong with them, man. There's something that happened when they were kids. I don't think they got the puppy they wanted or the bicycle got stolen or something. Or they have a higher calling and they're going to hip all of us to what that is whenever they figure it, whenever they tune it in, man, and they stop getting the static.
I don't know, man. I kind of like the way you're looking at that, bro.
You like the way I look at it?
Yeah. Well, you're saying it's just a holiday. It can be any kind of festival.
No, it's not. Can't be any kind of festival. It's a holiday festival to me that I call Christmas. And sometimes I call it, you know how a lot of times you'll see a card, Happy Yuletides or Yuletime, that kind of jazz?
Yeah, it'll say like Yuletide.
Yuletide, yeah. Well, Yule is actually the pagan celebration of Christmas. But, you know, we use that. We use the term Yule.
What about Hanukkah and stuff like that?
Fine. Hanukkah's, you know, Hanukkah's cool. I don't mention Hanukkah because, well, you know,
the Jews.
No, I'm kidding. Hanukkah's great, although many of my Jewish friends will tell you, compared to Christmas, Hanukkah's a crashing bore.
You better watch how you say that.
No, but I mean, the point is, yes, that's fine too. It's just a big, cool time of the year to have a festival where people give presents and try to feel good about each other and try to feel good about the world. And can't we do that? No, we can't. We have to have, here they come. There's always got to be in America, and it's a beautiful thing. Every positive force has its negative force. Isn't that sort of the physics way of viewing things? So such is the case, I suppose, in holidays. Every good time has to be counterbalanced by a bad time, someone trying to screw it up. So here is a poll worker, or toll worker, Lana Fontanetta, talking to WTSP television that she wasn't happy with the rule change.
Christmas is the biggest holiday and means so much to me. You want to feel the joy. And I feel like somebody's trying to keep me down.
Yeah.
I am a Christian. And I'm not afraid to say it. I feel like someone's trying to tell me not to celebrate.
Uh-huh.
Or how to celebrate.
Blah, 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 blah. Oh, shut up. No, that's very good, Len. I agree with you. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And a couple of sad stories, and I mean that very seriously. For me, I was not a John Edwards fan, and I don't suppose you could say that I was an Elizabeth Edwards fan, but as the months went by and I saw what that lady was contending with, and the kind of woman that she was, you know, I mean, her political point of view aside, who cares? But what she was contending with, man, I became quite an admirer of hers. And today we find that Elizabeth Edwards apparently has posted a goodbye message on a website, the estranged wife of former Democratic presidential candidate John Edwards. She's been advised by doctors that further treatment of her cancer would be unproductive. A source close to the family told CBS News that she is dying. The source said Edwards would likely die within weeks, possibly days. She posted to her personal Facebook page a message to friends, reading in part, "The days of our lives for all of us are numbered. We know that." CBS News has confirmed the Edwards family, including husband John, are now gathered with Elizabeth Edwards at the family home in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. She was diagnosed with breast cancer in November of 2004, shortly before the presidential election in which her husband was the Democratic vice presidential nominee. In March of 2007, at the start of John Edwards' presidential campaign, she revealed that the condition had returned and had spread to her bones and that she had been diagnosed as terminal. The couple separated, as you know, following these revelations about Edwards and the affair that he had during the campaign. Elizabeth Edwards was hospitalized last week with doctors saying the cancer had metastasized to her liver. That was according to People magazine. So Elizabeth Edwards has said goodbye on Facebook. That's a first, I think. Maybe not a first, but that's someone so prominent. Meanwhile, Don Meredith, the third voice there in the booth on Monday Night Football in the 70s, when Monday Night Football was a television phenomenon, has died. Don Meredith was the quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys and then joined Howard Cosell and Frank Gifford in the ABC Monday Night Football booth in 1970. His irreverent personality made him one of the most beloved figures in sports and entertainment in the 70s and 80s, helping turn the Cowboys and Monday Night Football into national sensations. Don died Sunday after he suffered a brain hemorrhage and lapsed into a coma in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He was 72. He was with his wife, Susan. They'd been married 25 years. A folksy foil to Cosell's tell-it-like-it-is pomposity, Meredith was at his best with unscripted one-liners, often aimed at his broadcast partners. His trademark, though, came when one team had the game locked up. Meredith would warble, turn out the lights, "The Party's Over," from a song by his pal, Willie Nelson. He played for the Cowboys from 1960 through 68, taking them from winless expansion team to the brink of a championship. He was only 31 when he retired from before training camp in 1969, and a year later wound up alongside Cosell in the broadcast booth. And I read where Meredith never played at Texas Stadium in Irving. He played at the Cotton Bowl. And when he walked into Texas Stadium, he said, "I'm glad I retired. I wouldn't want to play in this place." So that's Don Meredith, 72 years. I suppose it sounds like an old-timer, though, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, what about the thing you said? That is pretty funny, the way you said it.
What thing that I said?
You were talking about what Cosell there won't?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's hard. I can't tell it right, but Cosell says, "And the Kansas City Chiefs have turned the ball over, you know, four times, as is their wont." Meaning their tendency, right?
Yeah.
And Meredith goes, "Won't." And Cosell says, "Yes, won't. W-O-N-T. And the education of Dandy Don continues." And he said, "That's how I pronounce W-A-N-T.
I bet that's pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, that makes two of you, because I don't even remember why I thought it was funny. Anyway, here is Don Meredith singing "Turn Out the Lights" and...
"Turn out the lights, this party's over. They say that all good things must end. Let's call it a night. The party's over, and tomorrow starts the same old thing again."
Anyway, that's not him at a... That wasn't too... You know.
That's when he was old.
Well, it was in 2008 when SMU retired his jersey. Okay. Would you use a rented Christmas tree? Apparently, they're growing in popularity. I don't know whether we're going to do that story or not, but I guess we will. And we also have the box office results coming up next. What the hell are you giving me here, man? Get this out of here. We already read that stuff. We got some of that stuff coming up next. We got Taylor Swift. What the hell did you put on my freaking screen, man? 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL is the number, and also our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. And we'll have more news for you coming up.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, I'm telling about people about that, man.
That's a very good point, Robert. Thank you. Phil Henry Show here in our news hour, Robert Leonard and Bud Dickman. Well, okay, so you think I should, Bud?
Yeah, and tell everybody, you know, when you started smoking, you was 14.
I started smoking cigarettes when I was 14, and I quit last December 26th, okay? It's coming up on 1 year. Now, the reason why it's significant that I've given up cigarettes for 1 year is that's the longest that I can remember having quit before. So since I was 14, I've never given up cigarettes longer than a year. And once I hit that 1 year milestone, every day after that's going to be a record.
Man.
And it took getting pneumonia, and it took getting H1N1 swine flu pneumonia. It took getting that sick for me to give up the cigarettes, man. And, you know, I'll never forget. They would put me in a wheelchair. I was in the hospital a year ago, okay?
You're down right down the street, right?
I was at St. John's, one of the greatest hospitals in California, St. John's Regional. And of course, it's a Catholic hospital, so like every day there'd be someone, care to take Holy Communion today, Mr. Henry? And well, no, we'll pray for you. It was almost like I was, like, going to die or something, you know?
Yeah, you might have died, man. You could have died. You don't know.
I wasn't going to die.
How do you know?
I'm not going to die. I mean, if I was going to die, they would have put me in intensive care.
You don't know, man. They won't tell you.
Oh, okay. They won't tell me, huh? Well, anyway, I was really sick. I know that. But I'll never forget, they put me in a wheelchair to take me down to X-ray. Now, if you've never been in a wheelchair in your life, if you want to feel for the first time in your life like you got no control over nothing, like you have no power, like you are, I've never felt that sensation before. And I know many of you listen to me who are in wheelchairs, and you've gotten accustomed to it, and you've, you know, regained a sense of yourself. Imagine some schmuck like me, I'd never been in a wheelchair, and they're wheeling me along this corridor. I feel like garbage. I feel like I can't even lift up a straw. You know, that's how weak I feel. And there's people walking by, and they smile at you. Oh, hi, it's great, aren't you? Hi. And you know that they're, like, just to have pity for you, you know.
Yeah, they probably think you're, like, you're just an old man gonna die or something.
Yeah.
Well, I do.
All right, a minute ago, you guys are telling me that I was gonna die. Now you're laughing about it.
Yeah, they're looking at you like, well, that old man's gonna die.
What, do you find that funny or something?
No.
God, Bud, there were young people in the hospital too, man. Guys your age, okay? And they're in wheelchairs.
Yeah, we're going to be a young man going to die.
Yeah. You were in the hospital when you put your head through that tree.
I didn't put my head through the tree. The motorcycle did.
That's right. The motorcycle decided to go into the tree. I forgot. In any event, so there I am in this wheelchair, and you don't know, man. You don't know. Just getting pushed along this corridor, and I feel like 100, you know, I feel like 100 yards of garbage and just weak as hell. So I said, man, I know one thing I'm going to do. I said, I don't know about anything else. I know one thing I can do, and I will never pick up I don't say that to myself. I was going to say I'll never pick up a cigarette, but I'm going to quit smoking. And that was it. That's the last cigarette I had on the 26th was, I'll tell you right now, the 26th was a Saturday. That's the last cigarette that I had was on a Saturday. So I should say I quit. The last cigarette I had was a Friday. So I quit on a Saturday, the 26th. I didn't have a cigarette after that. And I was in agony. So it'll be a year, December 26th, and that's.
It's here for Phil Henry, yeah. Yay!
Thank you very much, guys. All right, now on to after a very poignant and heartrending story like that, TV ratings. It's interesting, sort of. Football runover, 20.8 million. There you go, the football runover, the big winner of the night. Actually, this was 7 o'clock Sunday night ratings. The football from the 4 o'clock game, 20 million. CBS next with 60 Minutes, 11 million. ABC next with America's Funniest Home Videos. I hate that show. I hate that show. I despise that show. 7.8 million.
Why?
Because it's asinine. It's the most asinine thing.
What's wrong with it, man?
Well, what do you guys like about some jive-ass dude getting hit on the head a million freaking times? NBC's Football Night in America, which is their football pre-show, 7.1 million. Now, let's get into the real nut and meat. Is that right? Anyway.
Nuts and meat.
Right, the nuts. NBC, Sunday Night Football, 17.8 million. CBS with Amazing Race, 10.5 million. Fox, third with The Simpsons and that big mouth Katy Perry, 9.6 million. And then The Cleveland Show, 7.1 million. Is that a, what is that, The Cleveland Show? Is that a Seth MacFarlane show? And then ABC's Extreme Makeover, Home Edition, 8.1 million. For a grand total of, I don't know, 9 o'clock, Sunday Night Football. Get a load of that, man. Boy, NBC really. Seth MacFarlane, yeah. How do you feel about that, Matt, being having to share a half hour with that guy? Anyway.
You better watch out, man.
Oh, shut up. 9 o'clock, Sunday Night Football. Who would have thunk it, man? Monday Night Football, it didn't do anything, but Sunday Night Football kicking ass, 20.1 million. ABC Desperate Housewives, number two with 11.2 million. CBS, number three with Undercover Boss. I love that show, Undercover Boss.
Yeah, did you see last night that guy was crying and everybody and everything about that too?
Which guy was crying?
One of the guys that cried, they gave the guy the real boss came on.
Yeah.
And the guy cried.
Oh, I did see that. Was that what he was doing?
Yeah, they gave him a promotion and stuff.
Oh, that's sweet, man.
Yeah. And another guy cried too.
That's sweet. You know, I don't know which boss this was this past week. But one of the bosses on the show, he was being a smartass, you know? And I guess he thought it was comedy. Like, I know what it was, the Subway guy.
Yeah.
And he goes, she says, all right, how many tomatoes? He goes, a lot of tomatoes. He was trying to be smart. She goes, you know what, man? Keep your comedy at the door. So she really busted on this guy. Loved it. Because this dude, he's the CEO of the company, and I guess he thinks he's got to do shtick. And meanwhile, there's this kid. She doesn't know what this is for. She figures she's got to train this jackball, and he's coming with the jokes. All right, 9 o'clock, Sunday Night Football, Desperate Housewives, Undercover Boss, The Cleveland Show, and American Dad. It's a Seth MacFarlane 90-minute extravaganza. NBC Sunday Night Football at 10 o'clock, CSI Miami-Dade.
Chicken Crap Miami-Dade.
And ABC's Brothers and Sisters, yeah, I'll bet it is. And that's a 7.7 million. Why does that sound dirty?
What?
If I say ABC's Brothers and Sisters, yeah, I'll bet they are.
Yeah, it does sound like incest.
It does.
I don't know, you're right. It sounds funny, too.
That's just a comedy device. All you got to do is say Brothers and Sisters, yeah, I'll bet. And immediately people start thinking filth, and they laugh. I don't know why.
It's pretty interesting, Mr. Henry.
Thank you. Obama and GOP have reached a deal to extend these tax cuts that everybody's talking about that they think are just going to save America as we know it. That's right, brushing past Democratic opposition. President Barack Obama announced agreement with Republicans Monday night on a plan to extend expiring income tax cuts for all Americans, renew jobless benefits for the long-term unemployed, and grant a one-year reduction in Social Security taxes. The emerging agreement also includes tax breaks for businesses that the president said would contribute to the economy's recovery from the worst recession in eight decades. Obama's announcement marked a dramatic reversal of his long-held insistence, originally laid out in his 2008 campaign, that tax cuts should be only extended to incomes up to $200,000 for individuals, $250,000 for couples. Well, so he's come through with his campaign promise, you know.
Yeah, but that's all.
Yeah, well, so now everybody gets one. What's wrong with that? He explained his about-face by saying that the agreement called for a temporary two-year extension of cuts at all income levels, not the permanent renewal that the Republicans have long sought. So it is a temporary two-year extension of cuts, not the permanent renewal. Even so, in a sign of Democratic discontent, Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid reacted curtly to the president's announcement. Why, that dirty N-word, he said. He
didn't say that.
No, he didn't. Of course he didn't. He said, even so, in a sign of Democratic discontent. No, he didn't say that. I said that. Here's what Harry Reid said. Now that the president has outlined his proposal, Senator Reid plans on discussing it with his caucus tomorrow. Huh? Said his spokesman Jim Manley in a written statement. So Harry Reid didn't say anything.
Yeah, you said something and Jim Manley said something. Harry Reid, he never said nothing.
He not never said nothing. Boy, you're getting better, man.
Wow. Don't talk about me.
Senator Bernie Sanders pain in the ass from Vermont raised the idea of utilizing a filibuster to stop from voting on this deal. Top Republicans were far more receptive. I appreciate the determined efforts of the president and vice president in working with Republicans on a bipartisan plan to prevent a tax hike on any American and in creating ba-ba-ba-boom-ba-bing-ba-bam-ba-bing. Let's get some President Barack Obama audio. Here we have the president. In announcing the tax cut deal, President Obama said today that yesterday that he wasn't in love with all the compromises, but says they're just temporary.
I have no doubt that everyone will find something in this compromise that they don't like. In fact, there are things in here that I don't like, namely the extension of the tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans and the wealthiest estates. But these tax cuts will expire in 2 years. And I'm confident that as we make tough choices about bringing our deficit down, as I engage in a conversation with the American people about the hard choices we're going to have to make to secure our future and our children's future and our grandchildren's future, it will become apparent that we cannot afford to extend those tax cuts any longer.
Well, no, wait a minute. He's extended the tax cuts on the wealthy. That's what they're upset about. But the tax cuts are extended for everyone, including those people who make up to $200,000 as individuals and $250,000 for couples. So he extended them for the wealthiest. And I think in many ways this is a perception problem that a lot of Democrats don't like, that it sounds like Obama's caved. Well, look, he just lived through a pretty hairy midterm. He's the president of the United States, but he's got himself a Republican Congress. He doesn't want to be a veto guy necessarily, so hey, you know, whatever. Some people, I don't know. Here is Senator Bernie Sanders from Vermont. He's an independent, which means that neither party wants him and they can't stand him.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, you're kidding.
No, it says Bernie Sanders I. What do you think that means? See?
Independent.
Exactly, independent.
Why?
Because they won't allow him in either party.
Oh, man, you're lying.
All right, okay, so I'm lying. He doesn't want to be in either party. Anyway, here's Bernie Sanders. He's not happy with the tax deal.
Not only is this bad...
Thanks a lot, Bernie. Next up, we have... No, here it is.
Not only is this bad public policy, I think it is bad politics. Who is going to believe the president or anybody who votes for this in the future...
Me?
...when you campaign for years against Bush's economic policy, and then you say, oh, by the way, that's what I'm voting for. I'm voting for tax breaks for the rich. And by the way, if it turns out in this deal to be 2 years, you can bet that that's just the beginning. It will be extended beyond that.
I want to ask you something there, sir. Is it about getting tax cuts for the middle class, which it does ensure, or are you just bothered because rich people have tax cuts? And I understand you're going to say to me, I'm bothered because rich people have tax cuts because we need that revenue. But I don't think that's it. I think you're just bugged because it seems like Obama caved to Republicans. But if you look at this deal, having lived through what he just lived through, having looked at these midterms, if it's a two-year extension, it's a two-year extension. I think he got a very good deal. Senator John Cornyn tells MSNBC that he's pleased with the compromise. He's a Republican from Texas.
The fact is, we need to continue to stimulate our economy, not through the sort of Keynesian approach of spending borrowed money that we've seen over the last 2 years, which has increased our debt by 29%, but rather by creating some stability and some predictability in our tax structure, which lets our job creators know what the playing field looks like, so hopefully they can get back in and invest and grow the economy and create jobs and opportunities.
There you have it. All right, coming up, attractive workers earn more money than ugly ones, supposedly. Plus, which movie finally knocked Harry Potter from the number one spot? We'll tell you. We come back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and watch us online at philhendryshow.com.
It's the Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Our news hour with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard. And we thank you all for being with us this evening. It's Tuesday. Our number, should you have occasion to call us, but not now, 877-876-PHIL. Just write that down, tattoo it, something. All right. We do have a story about Taylor Swift, and I guess she kicked ass last night in the American Country Awards. Am I right about that? I did see a little bit of the awards last night. Not much, but a little bit of it. And then, or was it tonight? I forget. She sold out some shows in record time. Maybe I should just do this story.
Yeah, I was going to see you talking about it.
Okay, fine. Venue owners coast to coast are cheering as the first dates for Taylor Swift's Speak Now tour go on sale. What happened here, Jason? Okay. Because it was tonight. Yeah, that's right. That's what I thought I was watching, the ACAs tonight. Anyway, the country star sold out two shows at L.A. Staples Center in 2 minutes, while her June 25th stop at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts, filled within 5 minutes. That's a 68,000-seat venue. Seven more sellouts followed, all on the heels of record-breaking run for her third album, Speak Now, which sold over 1 million copies. Freaking believable. Here is Taylor Swift off her album Speak Now, the hit song Sparks Fly.
Pretty hot.
Kicking ass, man. Seven more sellouts, as we mentioned, and Speak Now has sold over 1 million copies in its first week out. Drop everything now. Now, never mind that she's just a new generation Shania Twain. She's really,
You're going to get in trouble for that.
Well, come on.
Man, why can't you just let people have success and not, crap all over them and everything like that?
Well, she is, man. She's just another Shania. Okay, anyway. You're right. She should have her success. Taylor Swift is, it's a beautiful thing, man. You never know, though. You never know. You never, ever know. Somebody comes out of the gate selling this much in terms of record sales and concert seats. It doesn't necessarily guarantee anything, you know?
Well, what do you mean?
Like, is she going to continue doing this?
Oh, yeah.
Some do and some don't, so... Anyway, the high demand for Swift's tour prompted venues to add additional shows, including two at the Staples Center on the 27th and 28th of August for next year. The full Messina Group AEG tour runs for 90 shows in 19 countries, starting on February the 9th in Singapore. A full list of tour dates appears on Swift's official website. In related Swift news, in their annual Entertainers of the Year issue, Entertainment Weekly named Taylor Swift as the number one entertainer in 2010, beating out Kanye West, Christopher Nolan, Lady Gaga, Katy Perry, and a whole bunch of people. Oh, Glee, and a bunch of stuff like that. So she's kicking ass, and Kanye West said the whole thing is a racist plot. So this is great, man. All right, congratulations, young Miss Swift. $250,000, that's how much extra a good-looking American male will earn during his lifetime than less attractive colleagues, according to University of Texas economist Daniel Hammermesh. The study is done by Dr. Hammermesh, who has written a book entitled Beauty Pays that will be published next summer by Princeton University Press. Not only contend that beauty has benefits, but that unattractiveness carries a penalty.
Is that really?
Yeah, that means, bud, you and me, forget it.
I'll make money.
You're better looking than we are. I'll give you that, Robert. After adjusting for all the other factors that can affect earnings, according to Mr. Hammersmith, women in the bottom third of looks are paid about 4% less than average-looking employees, and men in that group are paid 13% less. Wow. So how about that?
What do you think?
Well, I mean, at the top, men are making more money because they're good-looking, maybe women, but the guys take it in the shorts, 13% less. The women are being paid 4% less, but ugly guys, we get really screwed.
You think that's why you probably don't make a lot of money?
No doubt.
You shut up.
If we accept that these findings are accurate, and why doubt Dr. Hammermesh? The questions then become, does it matter? The answer? Of course it doesn't. But it fills up some good time as we make our way to 58 and the end of the show. If we accept that these findings are accurate, the questions then become, does it matter, and should we do anything about it? On that, the experts disagree. Dr. Hammermesh says, all I want to do is cash the checks from the book and get out of here. One who thinks that people should not be penalized for their appearance is Deborah Rode. Why? Because she'd make a buzzard fall off of a crap wagon. I'm kidding. Boy, what a weird ass.
That's the weirdest laugh I ever heard, man.
Deborah Rode, who is a law professor at Stanford University and could make a freight train take a dirt road.
It's fantastic.
Shut up. Anyway, Ms. Rode said that is wrong, and she wrote a book called The Beauty Bias. She believes there need to be more state or local laws banning. How are you going to do that? More state or local laws doing what? Banning discrimination based on how ugly somebody is? We're really getting weird. I mean, I'm telling you, we're headed toward gridlock. We're headed toward a kind of moral gridlock. We're trying to make everything so perfect, and you can't do it. We cannot do it. Thank you. Now, speaking of trying to make things perfect, even on a tough night, Jason Rance is our producer. Charles Wagon is our engineer and our technical director. Dan Northcraft, our associate producer and screener. Thanks, guys. Great job. I'll try harder. I'll do better tomorrow night. Now I'm going to get off the air, go take a look at my new car, turn off Craig Ferguson. That's all, you know. See you tomorrow. And don't forget PhilHenryShow.com.
Phil Henry.